This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is
this the dagger?
The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
What's going on? It's time for another edition of the Neutral Zone. It's Friday, 4 o'clock in the East. And, you know, I have to say that I'm having a bit of withdrawal over the Olympics, Paralympic Games. It all just seems to have come and gone very, very quickly. And so that's kind of how I'm feeling this week. But on the horizon is NFL football, which is always exciting. And hockey is just around the corner, which can only mean one other thing. That winter word, and I'm sorry for anyone that I just said a bad word to, but it's also around the corner as well. Joining me this week is Claire Buchanan. Claire, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Brock. I have my first week of school under my belt, and feels weird being in a building of people that I have a good 10, 15 years on right now. But it's exciting to be doing what I'm doing and getting back into it. So it's been an interesting week.
Yes. Do you want to share what you're doing with school?
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys have... you guys brought me in a couple years ago, and I've been with the Neutral Zone ever since. And you guys have opened up the world of broadcasting to me, and I've ignited this passion with doing so. And it's allowing me, as someone who likes to share their opinion and use their voice, to hopefully one day do this every day of my life. So, I appreciate you guys paving the way for me.
Well, we appreciate you having the drive to want to do it as well and enjoying sitting around with us weekly and kibitzing about sports. And so good luck with that, and I hope you enjoy it. I have done the broadcasting school / course, and it is a fun one, but man, can it ever get busy. But if it's your passion and you really enjoy it, it'll fly by, so definitely enjoy. Someone else we enjoy talking to is Josh Watson. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing well, Brock. It is Friday afternoon. The sun is shining. We get to talk about some NFL, some CFL, and some bocce. It's going to be a good day.
Yes, it is going to be a good day. And to kick off the day, let's get into our headlines for this week.
The Paralympic Games have now wrapped up, and Canada's final medal count ended with us grabbing 5 gold, 10 silver, and 6 bronze for a total of 21 medals. Now, the top 3 final standings were the People's Republic of China that came away with 207 medals, Great Britain that came away with 124, and USA in third with 104 total medals.
Once again, Canada is proving strong at the U.S. Open tennis tournament. Leila Annie Fernandez has already booked her ticket into the final, and it's her first final. And Felix Auger-Aliassime is looking to follow suit. And this would make for history, having a final of one Canadian on the men's side and one Canadian on the women's side. And if you're looking for that match, it is on TSN. Right now on Friday, I believe they're just about to start the second set, so good luck to OJ.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a milestone this week by passing the 40 home run mark for the season. He currently sits, as we speak on Friday, at 42 home runs for the season and has passed 100 RBIs. The man is just having an incredible season, and when you consider his age, I'm just even more impressed.
The Ottawa Senators have extended the contract of general manager Pierre Dorion through the 2024 and 2025 season with a team option for the 25 and 26 season, the club announced this Tuesday.
those are your headlines for this week. Let's check in on the Twitter poll from last week. And the question was, which sport had you most intrigued over the games? 20% of you said team sport, and we had a tie for individual and both at 40%. This week's Twitter poll question is, do you support the extra game for all teams in the National Football League? Your answers are simply yes or no. Coming up next, we're going to speak to David Smith, who's a bocce athlete and a six-time medalist in the sport of bocce. He'll be right around the corner. You're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. We'll be back.
And welcome back to the Neutral Zone AMI broadcast booth.
Play ball.
And we are set to get this ball game underway. The first pitch brought to you by Brock Richardson's Twitter account at Neutral Zone BR. First pitch, strike. And hey, gang, why not strike up a Twitter chat with Claire Buchanan for the Neutral Zone? Find her at Neutral Zone CB. And there's a swing and a chopper out to second base right at Claire. She picks up the ball, throws it over to first base for a routine out. And fans, there is nothing routine about connecting with Cam and Josh from the Neutral Zone. At Neutral Zone, Cam J and at J Watson 200. Now that's a winning combination. And this Oregon interlude is brought to you by AMI Audio on Twitter. Get in touch with the Neutral Zone. Type in at AMI Audio.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Claire Buchanan and Josh Watson. And I'm going to tell you that this next segment is a special one for me because I played the sport of bocce for many years and have since retired, but still very deeply follow it. And our next guest is a six-time Paralympic medalist in bocce in both team and individual, and he joins us to discuss his tremendous career. David, my friend, welcome to the program, and nice to share the airways with you.
Hi, mate. How you doing, Brock?
I'm well, thank you.
Can we start with how you got involved with bocce?
Yeah, definitely. So I started playing back in, probably 1996. I was pretty rubbish at it, and I used to throw sideways, would you believe? And I probably didn't win end for the first 6 years of playing. Then when I hit secondary school, I realised that throwing forwards and pointing at the target was a good thing to do, and it was a good thing to do. And I actually went to Treloar's my school, and they kind of taught me how to train properly. So basically, because of that, I started getting quite good, lots of competitions, and I went to a British Championships once and won it. So that was kind of how it went.
Well, I can already tell that I'm going to enjoy your sense of humor, David. Can you tell us a little bit about what your experience was like in Tokyo with the pandemic as the backdrop?
Tokyo was bloody awesome. Sorry, I'm not allowed to swear properly, but Tokyo was amazing. We didn't have a crowd, but the venues were stunning. Like, it's probably the best place I ever played bocce at. It was just an awesome place, and that kind of made up for the lack of crowd, I guess, and also the whole COVID thing. Everything was done above board, so the Japanese are well on it, and it felt really safe. Actually, it kind of felt normal. The process, all the testing every morning, we kind of got used to it. Like, I'm still kind of missing not doing my temperature checks every morning and doing all that sort of stuff. It kind of, you get into a habit. It was all good.
And just in regards to the competition itself, was there any turning point for you where you really started to feel like maybe the gold medal was in, we'll say, within your grasp?
I guess I go into every tournament with the sort of the aim to win it. I mean, who doesn't? I think that's kind of. But I wasn't this time. I was quite content in where I was at, like with myself, how my preparation going into it. So I never really felt under pressure to win, and I never really felt like. So I was just kind of there to enjoy it. Try and play as well as I could along the way, knowing that if I played really well, I'd be pretty difficult to beat. So the outcome was never really in my mind. Probably when I got to the quarterfinals, because obviously no one, I hate quarterfinals, I always have, because it's sort of one of those horrible moments where it's knockout, and if you lose, you're out, and you get nothing to show for it, but you still have to get through the pools. But the quarterfinals actually was probably my best game. It was amazing. I can't remember playing so well. I felt sorry for the other guy, really, because I was on fire. And he was ranked number two in the world. So, yeah, it was just it was unfortunate for him that I hit the purple patch at that point. Moving on to the semis and the final, I guess I probably wasn't thinking about winning until I got to the final. You kind of think that whole content, oh, it doesn't matter, blah, 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 kind of went, oh, actually, I'm here now. I've worked hard to get here. It would be a shame if I mess it up now. So that probably was where I was at in the first end or so, which is why I made a bit of a shaky start. But then once I settled in and I found a weakness, I was able to turn it around and slowly grind chew the Malaysian guy down. It was a good game though, and I'm glad it was live on our terrestrial TV. So millions of people watched it back home. So yeah, it was kind of a seminal moment for Boccia, actually, I would say, more than anything else. Probably did the sport more favours than it did me, being so close. But yeah, it was good.
And just as a follow-up, what would you say was the toughest challenge of your competition, and how would you have overcome that?
I had quite a few challenges. I was struggling with the floor early on, like reading it long. So that was a challenge. That was really tough. I changed my throw over the pandemic and thought I'd solved that problem and realized that actually under pressure with the sweat and the lights and stuff, that my old throw was actually a better option. So having not used it for 2 years, I had to kind of bring it out of the shed, all rusty and covered in cobwebs. And basically, the first time I used it in anger was in the quarterfinals. and it worked, thank God. So that was quite a challenge. And obviously, balls as well. I had a couple of issues with balls I had to kind of deal with through the tournament. It's the usual stuff where the stitching starts going, or as they get hot, they get a bit softer, and then they start failing roll tests and stuff, and you just got to kind of sub them in and out as they get too soft. I had to keep an eye on that. But apart from that, the tournament went pretty well, I think. I was able to overcome most of my issues quite quickly.
We're joined by David Smith, who is a six-time Paralympic medalist in the sport of bocce, and I'm Brock Richardson, joined by Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan, and you're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio.
Now, we mentioned how lengthy your resume is, and with three golds in your pocket and six medals total, is there any victory that is more special to you than the others?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's only five medals. I think you're giving me too much credit. So I've got three golds, one silver, one bronze. So that's my total. Special. I would probably say this one was probably the most special, actually. This was my favourite Paralympic game so far. The the way that the team came together, Paralympics GB, the Boccia squad, the way we supported each other, and just the whole vibe of the Japanese, the volunteers, the venue, the whole thing was just perfect. Like, I can't. That's probably why I got so emotional after the final. It just felt so special. And obviously being the honour of becoming flag bearer for the closing ceremony as well I can't describe how honoured I was to represent that team, because obviously Paralympics GB, we pretty much cleaned out. Like, apart from China, we were like second in the table, and there were so many fantastic performances across all sorts of different sports. To be recognised, and being a boccia player as well, that kind of, yeah, that was special. I was very honoured. So that was probably my, yeah. So I would say this games and those two moments were probably my proudest.
David, can you talk to us a little bit about how you managed to keep yourself at such a high level, considering that you have been in the sport for, it sounds like, 20 years?
Yeah. I guess it's just evolution. The sport has grown so much since I started. So my first international was back in 2005 at Europeans, and where I came eighth overall in the individuals. And then 2 years later, I became world champion for the first time. But to compare myself then to now is like chalk and cheese, because the game back then was quite amateurish, if I'm honest. Like, we didn't do half the stuff we do now in terms of, like, the warm-ups, the stretching, the physio, the gym work, nutrition, everything that sort of follows it. So, and actually, I have totally different throws now to what I did back then, different balls. So, it's a completely different game, really. And I guess for me, that what's kept me relevant is that I've been challenged. I don't like losing, and when I do lose, I tend to analyze my loss quite quickly and figure out why I lost. There's not many games that I've had where I've come off the court thinking, oh, I have no idea how to win that. Usually there's a pretty quick solution. And the ones I have struggled to figure out a solution, I've got great support behind me with Sarah, my assistant, and obviously coaches that I've had along the years who have been able to kind of lean me to a new style of play, or so that's kind of been my, I've been lucky in that sense that I've always been able to evolve with the times.
Now, with having so much experience in the game and reaching the pinnacle of the sport multiple times, what's left in your tank? Do you have more goals to achieve, or is this kind of a final goodbye?
It's definitely not a goodbye. I think for me now, I don't feel like I need to prove anything anymore. So I'm playing the game now purely because I enjoy it. And because I want to make boccia a really popular Paralympic sport. So I'm not doing it for myself anymore. I don't feel the need to win all the time. Don't get me wrong, I love winning, and I'm not going to be losing anytime soon. But I don't feel the need to. It's not like a noose over my neck. Financially, I don't have. I'm not solely reliant on the sport for my income anymore. So that's a massive weight off my shoulders. So it's that kind of the freedom to play. Now it's just about me trying to be as, you know, I still feel like there's more in the tank potentially. Like, my coaches are saying, look, we haven't scratched the surface with you yet. There's so much more we can develop from you. So I'm excited for that, to see how far I can get. You know, maybe a BC1 playing BC2, BC4 standard would be quite cool. I'm not far off that, but, you know, if I can start playing like that, that'd be pretty awesome. And I enjoy playing well anyway, so I'm excited to see what the next chapter is. And if I can keep getting on the highlights reels of great shots and good moments, then I'll be well happy.
David, for me, when I think of bocce and the change of evolution, let's say, in the understanding of, you know, when bocce became on the scene. I think back to our competition in 2012 when we were told, you know, early on that bocce was one of the most watched or the most watched competition in the village and beyond. Do you believe that that was the stepping stone in London to push bocce forward? Or do you think moving forward, 10 years removed from that almost, do you think there's been another moment where it's changed for bocce?
Yeah, I think London was great. Don't get me wrong. I love London. Obviously, I'm biased because it's my home games. But I do think bocce got left behind a little bit in London. A lot of the other Paralympic sports got popular, which is great. Obviously, like we want as Paralympians, we want Paralympic sport to be recognised as sport. And we want, we want people paying people to watch and enjoy the sport that's on offer, regardless of the disability. London was great for that because it definitely shifted perceptions of Paralympic sport in general. I just don't think bocce, we didn't quite go along with that. I think part of that was due to the fact we didn't have a live court. And although we had great crowds, a lot of the crowd were people that already knew bocce. So most of the crowd in London were friends, family from Bocce England, from Bocce Wales, people that already were well versed in Bocce anyway. They didn't need to be converted. They were preaching to the converted. Whereas this time in Tokyo, because we had the live stream, we're broadcasting to a whole new audience of people that would never have seen it. I know that we've been inundated, our Bocce club, with people wanting to join because they saw us on the TV live in the morning at 8 p.m. UK time, and it's that prime time TV where people could just sit and watch, oh my god, that's cool, kind of thing. That's the moment I think that bocce becomes relevant. I think in London we missed the boat a little bit, and I think Rio was Rio, it was okay, but I don't think obviously again we didn't have the live court, whereas this time thankfully the OBF finally decided to give us a live court, and I'm excited to see what the future holds now, because I think it's unlocked massive potential in the game.
Absolutely. David, I also have you on Facebook, and I've seen a few posts about you thanking your support system. Can you talk a little bit about your support system and the importance they have on you to be as successful as you have?
Yeah, so, I mean, my main support, three people, really. So, Sarah, my sports assistant, who sits behind me and probably passes me the balls, she's been massive since she started working with me 10 years ago, pretty much. Then I've got Glenn, my coach, who joined me in 2016, literally in the quarterfinals, and I was having a bit of a meltdown, and he's been my rock ever since. In the background, my physio or physios from Bocce UK. So we have Fran, who comes out with us to most tournaments. And she's great. She knows my body really well, and she's able to fix me whenever I break myself. those are the three kind of main people, I would say, in my sort of individual support network. But then the squad as a whole, I've got friends and practically family. I've known people in the squad for, well over 10 years. My teammates are really close. We're really close. We know each other extremely well. It's a really close-knit group. It was the lack of crowd didn't matter because I had them behind me and I could feel them when they were cheering in the background right over my shoulder. And that is hugely powerful. I just love playing in front of them.
Fair enough. David, thank you so much for joining us today on the program. And congratulations on your success, but specifically in Tokyo, and all the best in the future. And we hope to have you on again down the line.
Thank you very much.
That was David Smith, who is a 5-time Paralympic medalist in the sport of bocce. Coming up next, we're going to be joined by Jeff Ryman for the second half of the program, who's producer over there at Kelly & Company. And we're going to start things off with the NFL. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Josh Watson and Claire Buchanan. And joining us for the second half of our program is a co-producer of Kelly & Company, Jeff Ryman. And of course, you can catch Kelly & Company from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern, Monday to Friday. Jeff, how are you?
I'm a lot better now that the NFL has started, I'll tell you that. It was kind of, one of those long waits throughout the summer, but glad it's here and glad fantasy football's back as well.
Yes, we all need a little fantasy in our life. I'm looking forward to the AMI hockey pool that takes place yearly, so that will be good. But right now we can settle with some NFL. The NFL season kicked off last night. Before we talk about last night's game first, and then we're going to run down as many of the divisions as we can. Do you support the extra game season, which is our Twitter poll question of the week? Jeff, I'll let you go first, then we'll go with Josh and then Claire.
I will say yes, I do support that. They got rid of one of the preseason games, so it's not like they're playing that much more football. And let's face it, the starters rarely play, if at all, in preseason games. So adding an extra NFL game, I'll never say no to that, Brock. I feel like, you know, if you add more games to sports, I mean, without going overboard, of course, but more sports, the better. More games, the better. So, I mean, it's one extra game. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, as a... Go ahead, Josh.
Okay. yeah, I totally agree. I think with the way we monitor health and safety now, with the way the guys come into training camp, quote unquote, there's no reason not to. It's a chance to feed the cash cow that is the NFL. And I mean, literally, these guys come into camp in playing shape. We're well past the days where guys have to go for 4 to 6 weeks just to get into playing shape. Those days are done. So bring on more meaningful football.
Yeah, that's it, right, Josh? Like, these guys are training all year round. They're professional athletes. So the fact that they didn't, like Jeff said, they didn't just add another game. They replaced a preseason game with a regular season game. So it's not putting more of a load on the athletes in terms of more games. It's just I think they're just fine tuning and making sure that the fans get more games and to watch. And we get a season where it's harder to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Let's start by talking about as many of these divisions as we can. I'm going to lead off the AFC East, and I'm going to probably rattle Josh's cage a little bit, although maybe he agrees. We'll find out in a second. But for me, I see the East in the AFC going to the Buffalo Bills. I do not see Tua Tagovailoa doing the things he needs to do for the whole season. I think we saw Ryan Fitzpatrick come in and be the knight in shining armor when things got tough last year. That's not going to be the case this year. And I just simply don't see the consistency out of the Dolphins, and I could be wrong. I know he's young. I know he's emerging. I get all that. But Josh Allen and the team that they've built over there in Buffalo is built for the now versus the future. Jeff, want to get your thoughts on? No, you know what? Let me hear from Josh. Josh, do you agree with what I'm saying, or am I underselling Tua?
I don't think you're necessarily underselling him. I think the thing to bear in mind with the Dolphins is that Tua has had that first year with Fitzmagic as his buddy, his savior, his whatever you want to call him. Don't forget the fact that they drafted Jalen Waddle at wide receiver. I think he's going to help the passing game a lot based on the fact that they basically had Mike Gesicki and Devontae Parker last season as their only real viable options. I'm scared to see what's going to happen with their running game because I think any good team needs a running game. I do agree with you, unfortunately, in regards to the seeding. I do think Buffalo is very strong this year. I will be curious in the AFC to see how the dreaded New England Patriots do, because Bill had a chance to sit on the sidelines and watch the playoffs last year from his cave, wherever he goes when he's not in his office or on the field. And I don't think he liked it. I think he wants to be back there, and they spent a bunch in free agency to bring in players for that team. They got rid of Cam Newton. They went with a young, I'll say, Tom Brady prototype in Mac Jones. So I'm scared of the Patriots, but I still think the Bills are going to pull it out in the AFC East, unfortunately.
Jeff, thoughts?
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think Buffalo is the team to beat. I think they proved last year with their juggernaut offense, they had the most points for out of any team in the AFC. That includes, of course, the Kansas City Chiefs, who were obviously well known for their offense the last couple of years with a quarterback by the name of Patrick Mahomes. You may have heard of him. But the Buffalo Maybe. Bills, I mean, their defense, they're just such a well-rounded team. They went on a tear towards the end of the year. They finished on a 6-game win streak. They looked so dominant that last preseason game, especially with Josh Allen at the helm. I mean, this guy looks like he hasn't missed a beat from his MVP-like season last year. I think, honestly, if you're going to do some projections, I think that the standings pretty much are going to remain the exact same from a year ago, where it's Buffalo number one, Miami two, New England three, the New York Jets number four. But I think one of the most intriguing things about this whole division is that every single starting quarterback is under the age of 25. You rarely see that in the NFL. And like what Josh was saying, the New England Patriots starting a rookie quarterback right from the get-go, a little surprising. But nonetheless, they're going with Mac Jones, a quarterback from Alabama, who they drafted in the first round. So they've been looking for that quarterback ever since Tampa Tom headed to Florida. But I think New England kind of could be the X factor. You know, when you pair up what could be a great quarterback with the bright mind of Bill Belichick, it could be a recipe for success. So I think that's where, you know, the true question mark lies. The New York Jets, I mean, they sort of hit the refresh button over the course of the offseason. They went with Zach Wilson at quarterback with their first pick, very high in the NFL draft. So I don't know. I'm never really truly high on rookie quarterbacks their first year. I think it really takes them a 1 year to properly develop. So I just don't see it from New York. They're also battling a bunch of injuries right now. But yeah, I think that it's Buffalo's division to lose.
Claire, any comments on the AFC East before we move down the page?
Yeah, I think that as I might be biased as a former Alabama player myself, but I think coming out of Alabama and the way that they play, and obviously the coaching of Nick Saban there, that I think Mac Jones is going to fit really well with Bill Belichick. And I think he has a great chance to turn that team around again and have that, again, Brady-like confidence in his team. And yeah, the Bills are, I think, drooling at the mouth for another season. They finished off really well. And yeah, I see them taking the division as well.
All right, let's move on and discuss the AFC North Division. Jeff, want to go first?
Sure. I just want to say that Baltimore, I mean, I feel for these guys having so many injuries already, and they have yet to step on the field for week one of the season. They lost Gus Edwards, one of their only running backs that they had signed throughout the offseason, went down with an ACL injury. So now they've lost, I think, three running backs in the past couple of weeks. So, you know, tough news there. They also lost Marcus Peters, one of their top defensive players, yesterday. I think it was back-to-back plays in practice. So two tough blows for the Baltimore Ravens yesterday at practice, but they've still got a guy named Lamar Jackson, and I think that he's going to step up in a big way. He had the MVP season two seasons ago. Took a tiny step back, but still had a very productive season last year. Pittsburgh, I mean, this team, I think it lives and dies by Ben Roethlisberger. He wasn't great, but he wasn't horrible last year either. I mean, he's getting up there in age. He's been around the block a couple of times. They just signed their top defensive player, maybe the best defensive player in the entire league, officially today, TJ Watt, to a massive contract. So, you know, that's something to watch out for. And the Cleveland Browns, I think that, you know, with Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, that offense is pretty loaded. We'll see how well they can pull this thing out. All three of those teams I just mentioned made the playoffs last year. It could be the same this year. It just depends on how things shift out and play out in the AFC. And those poor Bengals, I don't really know what to expect from them. Joe Burrow, I mean, went down with an injury last year. He was having a pretty solid season as a rookie quarterback. You know, I think that's obviously a huge question mark again with those young quarterbacks. Always question marks, in my opinion.
Yeah. Josh, any comment?
For the most part, I agree. I do think the Steelers will be a little stronger than they were last year, just because there is a lot of talk about this new running back, Najee Harris. I agree with Jeff completely. I feel bad for the Baltimore Ravens, because you go into a season thinking this could be our year. This could be a fresh start. We're going to do so many great things. And then the injury bug just not just bites you, but basically consumes a large part of your team. I think the Bengals, or the Bungles, as I tend to call them, will be better this year, because I think Burrow is going to play more. I think he is going to have learned from last season that he can't just sit behind that, shall we call it, porous offensive line. So I still think they're going to end up in the bottom of that division, but I think it's going to be the Steelers and Browns this year that are going to battle for the top. We'll see how much of an impact Odell Beckham has on the Browns. I don't care for him personally. I think he's very dangerous for a locker room, but he's back, so we'll see what happens.
I'm going to jump down the page here a little bit, and we'll lead with Claire on this one. NFC North has Claire's Green Bay Packers in there. Aside, Claire, from Aaron Rodgers and the drama that was, you know, persist last year with whether I want to go, want to stay, whatever. What do you make of this division?
Well, hopefully the drama's over, right? He definitely took advantage of social media throughout that and poking at the bear. And I'm excited to see what the New Orleans Saints actually have. They open up against the Green Bay Packers. And it'll be interesting to see if Aaron Rodgers is comfortable where he is, and if he's actually happy playing football there. And hopefully the stirring of the pot is over there in Green Bay. Well,
Jeff, I mean, his gig of wanting to be on Jeopardy is to be not. So I guess football is where he's going to stay. Are you surprised he's with Green Bay, Jeff?
Not surprised that he's still with Green Bay. It'll be a different story this time next year. I think he's as good as gone. I'd almost predict that he might end up a Las Vegas Raider. at this time next year. I just think that that relationship between Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay front office is one of those relationships that is past the point of no return. The reason being is that he roasted them for about 5 minutes in front of media, which you rarely see. I mean, this stuff usually doesn't get leaked. Aaron Rodgers went out and had the live mic in front of reporters on camera, on TV, on radio, and just shellacked the Green Bay front office. It was really entertaining. I loved it. I thought it was great. I want to see more of this throughout the season, to be honest. Sorry, Claire. But I also want to see this.
As long as it comes with a W beside it, as long as the drama comes with a W.
I think they'll be seeing a lot of W's, though. I mean, the NFC North is not the strongest division, you know, to say the least, in all of football. Detroit, I mean, I don't think we really need to talk about them very much.
Oh, boy.
They're a mess in themselves. Minnesota, I don't see them being a threat. Chicago, they made some improvements, but I don't think they're there quite yet. Green Bay is definitely the team to beat in the NFC North, but I hope I hear more sound bites from Aaron Rodgers as the season goes on.
Josh, I'll just get your thoughts quickly because we're going to wrap into this segment, but I want to chat about the NFC South with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Are we ever going to see Tom Brady come down to earth?
Well, just to wrap up the NFC North really fast, I think Green Bay is still likely the class of that division. I'm curious to see how long the we're not starting Justin Fields experiment goes in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I agree with Jeff. The Vikings and the Lions combined are pretty much a dumpster fire, so we'll just skip over those. As for the NFC South, I don't see the Saints being as strong this year. I mean, Jameis Winston's been at the helm of an NFL team and it has not gone well. If they decide to start Taysom Hill, maybe they have a chance. But I mean, I think we all have to be realistic and say that this is Tom Brady's division until such time as he decides for himself that he's no longer good enough. I mean, the man's a year older than me and he's still playing professional football. That says something, because there are days I get out of bed and hurt myself. So I can't even imagine playing professional football at this age.
Yeah, it's definitely a fair point. And he wants to play into his 50s, so we'll see how that goes. But I'm with you. I'm surprised every year.
Yeah, good luck with that.
That's a little bit of a look at your NFL preview, and I know that we didn't get to all the divisions, but we'd be here for 2 hours, and AMI will only have us on for an hour at the moment, so we're going to put a pin in it there. And coming up next, we're going to chat a little bit about the Toronto Blue Jays, who have really emerged to us talking about them, because 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't be saying the same thing. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Neutral Zone here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan, and Jeff Ryman, producer over there at Kelly & Company. I said it before the break, guys, that 2 weeks ago, I honestly did not think we'd be having this conversation. I thought we'd be talking about CFL, maybe a little NFL extended conversation, but the Blue Jays deserve 8 minutes of love because they have leapfrogged three teams to be at least in the conversation of the wild card. Jeff, as our honored guest this week, what say you about the Toronto Blue Jays?
Oh, I'm so honored, Brock. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about the Blue Jays. Honestly, I was kind of the same way as you. I thought, you know, I think they had like 8% chance or something of making the playoffs about a week or two ago. And
good
I was
old
thinking,
POF percentage. Good old
yeah, the old playoff percentage. And that was according to ESPN. Right now, they're at a 51.6% chance of making the playoffs. So, I mean, it's basically 50-50 at this point for the Blue Jays, who have won 8 in a row and 9 of their last 10. And that has come against some pretty solid teams in the Oakland Athletics and the New York Yankees, swept them both, which is just, you know, an incredible, incredible feat. And I actually came across a really crazy stat yesterday as well that basically said, well, this is according to ESPN Stats and Info, the Yankees were swept in 4 games by the Blue Jays and never had a lead. It's the first time in the Yankees have never led in a 4-plus game series since June 23rd, 1924.
Wow.
Pretty crazy.
Wow.
Pretty crazy stat coming from the New York Yankees. But the Blue Jays, I mean, they found an extra gear. It's like they were conserving their energy and, you know, making us fans wait until almost the last minute here. But they've been able to pull it off. I mean, Simeon, Bo Bichette had a great night the other night. Vladdy Jr. has found his stride again. The pitching, I mean, Robbie Ray, I mean, this guy should be in the Cy Young conversation. I mean, if he had a couple more wins, I think that he would really be in that conversation as one of the top pitchers in the league if he isn't already. So they've been able to piece everything together, something they haven't been able to do in the past. So it's nice to see. But I mean, there's still a month left and they've got some tough series coming up. I mean, not necessarily right now against those Baltimore Orioles, but they've still got the Yankees, I think, a couple of times, and I believe Tampa Bay's in there as well. So it's not all gravy from here on out. I'm a little bit skeptical, but it is nice to see them make a late push like this.
But Claire, here's the problem I have with the Toronto Blue Jays. We see them play well against good teams, and then they walk in and play Detroit, poop their pants. They walk in and play the Angels and poop their pants. And then they go and they sweep Oakland and the Yankees. So for me, everyone who says that they've had one of the easiest schedules, yeah, that might be true, but we're having trouble closing the deal on teams that we should. So I'm kind of scared of this Baltimore series, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should all be a little on the edge of our seats, just where they are at right now. But I think that's a mixture of just how young the team is. They have so much growth to go through. And it's, I think that's the part of the growing pains, is that you are going to come into what seems like an easy situation that should walk away with a sweep. And yeah, like you said, you might poop the bed. And I think, I think that comes with just growing into a more mature team and a more mature athlete individually. And I mean, our MVP candidate, Vladdy, he's 22 years old and he's hitting 42 home runs and he's still got what, like a week and a half, 2 weeks left of baseball. It's insane the depth that we have on this team. It's just, I think that their inexperience is showing.
Yeah, I would agree. Josh, like, I guess the question is, do you think this team becomes a playoff team? Like, are they there? Are they now in the conversation? Can you believe in this team, or are you scared that they're going to fall off again?
Well, I do have cautious optimism in regards to where they're going to finish, but I do think they're going to squeak in. I'll be honest, Brock, I think you've been telling me stories about how well you see, because I think you've been reading my show notes. I was absolutely going to bring up the fact that they play up to their opponent, or down in this case. I was certain when they went into Detroit that they were going to absolutely just destroy that Detroit team. And they did not. I will give them a pass on the LA series simply because Shohei Ohtani is doing just otherworldly things. But at the end of it all, I think they are either just going to squeak in or they are just going to miss. And I think the just miss is going to probably be better for them, but more heartbreaking for us.
Jeff, very quickly, if they don't make the playoffs, should we still be happy about it?
No, I don't think so. I think that they should be a playoff team, And I think that if they don't make the playoffs, I think there's going to be some big changes coming this offseason. I think especially from the bench boss position. So I think it would be a disappointment. They made it last year, and they're not inexperienced anymore. You know, this is what year number three or four with all these young guys in it. So yeah, I'd consider it a disappointment.
I think the thing that you have to learn if you are a Blue Jays fan is that POF percentage, playoff percentage, does not mean anything. They had under 10% chance 2 weeks ago, and it did not look good. And here we are with a 50-50 chance. And for me, we're playing meaningful baseball in September. And I know that contradicts what Jeff just said, but meaningful baseball is better than not meaningful baseball. And let's close the book. That's the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Claire Buchanan, and Jeff Ryman. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Dineen, and our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. And I am your host and producer of this program, Brock Richardson. Tune in next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.